Welcome back to the Teaching in Tech podcast, where we continue to explore everything related to teaching, learning, and technology integration. Working with teachers, we see amazing things happening in classrooms every day. In each episode, we'll detail teaching strategies and technology integration ideas that are working. Also, special guests will join us to share strategies that have been successful with students. All right, so we're back for another episode of Teaching in Tech with Alan and Chad. Alan, you ready to do this?
Oh, yeah. We got a good one today.
Yeah, I am pumped because this is going to be a very tech-focused episode today. And we are fortunate to have with us on the show, we have a digital innovation consultant from the from SPARC, the Stark Portage Area Computer Consortium. Matt Mays, welcome to Teaching in Tech.
Hey, Chad. Hey, Alan. Thank you so much for having me. I feel bad, though. You said, like, oh, yeah, I'm pumped about this episode. You're lying to the people up front already. This is how dare you mislead your listeners.
I think we've got some good stuff here as we've gained access to a lot of new tools. And I know for educators, anytime we can come across things that are going to help us in engaging students, become more efficient, add to the ways that we teach. Those are always good things and always a net positive. And I know we have some cool things to talk about today. So as we're getting started, you know, with this in this role, digital innovation consultant, I'm guessing that you did not graduate with a bachelor's degree from university and move right into that role. So maybe you can tell us a little bit in that role what you do and maybe just a little bit about some of the steps that you took along the way to get you to this position as a digital innovation consultant.
So I was fortunate enough to get the Chick Evans Caddy Scholarship. Have you guys heard of that before?
No.
Okay, great. So this is out to the masses. If you have seen the movie Caddyshack, where Danny Noonan is trying to get the Caddy Scholarship, that thing actually exists, and I got it. Oh, wow. So that sent me, I caddied at Glenmore Country Club, which is here in Canton, Ohio. Did that as a middle school student, high school student, applied for the scholarship, and then they sent me to The Ohio State University on a full ride scholarship. The only thing that you have to do is keep up your grades. So I was very fortunate to get that scholarship and did human ecology, human development, family science on the pathway to become a teacher.
And so wait, before you go too much further, I have to ask about this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I love this scholarship.
Yes.
So I'm going to go back to and I'm not sure what years you went through at Ohio State, but in 2014, I remember during the Cincinnati game, a kid took off running across the field and was tackled by, who at the time, Anthony Schlegel, who was the strength coach. And if I remember right, he was part of a Caddy scholarship program and actually lost his position. Do you remember that?
The very same. Yes. That was after I left.
Okay. Well, that's good. I thought you were going to say it was you.
I was there 04 through 08. And then at Ohio State at the time, you couldn't graduate with a teaching certificate. They forced you into a graduate program. I was the graduate resident advisor for our scholarship fraternity, for lack of a better word. I was the resident advisor from 2009 and 2010. So thank God I was out of the house before that happened.
Wow. Yeah, you don't want to touch that one.
No. So from there, I was born and raised here in Canton. I went to Perry High School. I went to Ohio State for college, and then I came back to Perry High School to teach. And so I did middle school language arts and social studies. And ultimately, the way that my first few years were structured really led me to that technology position. So when I came in, I did seventh grade. That second year, they restructured the buildings. And so then I became a sixth grade teacher, same classroom, just different grade. And then the following year, I had fifth grade. And so my first 3 years of teaching, I had six preps. And I was so burnt out, and I about lost my mind. And so my principal came one day, Chad Merritt, God love him. He's now the principal at Fairless High School. And he said, hey, we are thinking about doing this technology class. Would you, and I wouldn't even let him get it out. I said, yes. I said, yes, I will do that. I said, I have two questions. Like, if for some reason this doesn't go well, or you decide the year after that you don't want a technology class, do I still have a job? And he said, yes. And I said, great. And the second part is, am I going to be able to do this for more than 1 year? And he said, yes. And I said, great, sign me up. I'll do whatever you need me to do. You know, I'm happy to take this on. So I was fortunate enough while I was at Ohio State to like just dabble in a few things. That was like the rise of the smart board. So I got pretty proficient in using those. I was decent at like video editing. So I was doing some of that kind of stuff for the school too. And so he, you know, saw the vision and knew I had a penchant for technology. And I was able to kind of take that class and run with it. So for, I think, 3 or 4 years, I was the technology or instructional technology teacher at Pfeiffer Intermediate School to 5th and 6th grade students. And toward the end of that time, my role started to shift quite a bit, where it was not only like, let's teach the kids, but also none of this is going to work unless we start to teach the teachers too.
Right.
And so it became some of that, you know, professional development style thing, where they saw the benefit of that. So my role shifted from primarily with the kids to primarily with the adults, and I became an instructional coach. And so I loved getting to make those connections with teachers and being able to, you know, work together with them to help their students. Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, you know, pandemic hits and, you know, the whole world kind of explodes. And I reached out to our big bosses here at the ESC and just said, hey, you know, if there's ever an opportunity, you know, I'd love to be a part of the team. And Marty and Joe are two phenomenal human beings, and they were able to bring me on board. So, you know, been working in the curriculum department and, you know, over with Spark as well, and getting to work with Eric Kurtz, who I'm sure all of your listeners have heard. You know, it's, I think every day for me is like such a gift, because I'm like standing in the shadows of like nerd Michael Jordan in the ed tech world. And I'm trying desperately to be like John Paxson, to like hit a key shot every now and then, you know, Steve Kerr just standing there waiting for, you know, the time that I need to hit a three and come in and cash it, and then, you know, go about my business and do my thing. So just learned so much from Eric, and just being in this role in the community is just been phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric's been on with us before, and it's, I love the Michael Jordan analogy, because, you know, when you go down to OTEC or different conferences and some of those sessions, you know, you have maybe a half dozen people in there. And then with Eric, there's people sitting on the floor and standing in the doorway, and he definitely has a lot to share. So that's some good stuff.
Yes. And I will admit, like when I was in the classroom, you know, starting out as an instructional coach, even, I knew he was in our backyard. And so when I would go to conferences, like I would very quietly stalk all of his sessions. I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. He's doing this time, this time, this time, and this time. You know, I'm casually going to see my way into that room. He's not going to know I'm there, but I'm going to be there. You know, when I shifted more into that coaching role, we would be in meetings together for different things. And they'd be like, okay, you know, split up at these different tables and let's mix around. And even if they counted off and they were like, okay, you know, everybody count off and ones go to this table and twos go to this table and, you know, threes, I would always magically have the same number as him. I don't know how it happened, but that was just such an important connection to me to say, like, if this is the guy, then he's the one that I want to listen to and the one that I want to learn from. So, yeah, that's, if nothing else, you know, for anybody listening, like find those opportunities and create your own opportunities to learn from the best.
Yeah, no question. And I think really the biggest thing to me that I think is so impressive when I look at the, you know, his resources is that not only is he a really good communicator and able to explain things in a way that anybody who's even maybe not necessarily tech savvy can understand, but he just hit the amount of content that he's created, you know, in my role, very similar to what you've done in the past, instructional coach, technology specialist, I've done plenty of creating short video clips and slide decks, and it can get to be quite a task. And he always has new content on whatever the latest tool is. And to me, that's just impressive that that's all out there free, available for anybody who's trying to get better. So,
like that, I think is the magic of it. So I was talking with somebody in the office just a little bit ago. I said, like, if you're going to be a part of the nerd community, like you have to give as much as you are receiving. And so like, there's no better beacon of that than Eric. I mean, the idea that all of his content and all of his information is out there for us for free to utilize and to implement into our own classrooms is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, he could charge many, many thousands of dollars and get it from districts who would benefit, but
No question. Not only across the country, but probably even worldwide. So
yeah, he's going to New Zealand next summer to present a conference there. Like, I mean, it is his global reach. So like I said, I can't say enough nice things about him. Technically, he has retired from Spark, but he, you know, is still sticking on in some other capacity. So it will be a very sad day when we no longer have him as our beacon of integration.
Yeah, no doubt.
So everybody needs to take advantage now.
Exactly.
And you know, I'm just going to add that plug, right? You're sitting there talking about all this curated material that is free for teachers to come in and use, right? When Chad and I have talked about this numerous times, so many people are intimidated, right? Just take a few minutes to go through and watch something. And realize like the way he articulates it and makes it seem very seamless to integrate anything new, right? Just, I don't know, just go listen, right? Take a few minutes to do that.
Well, just like he always says, poke a stick at it.
Yeah, right.
Yes. And he's so good on his blog. That's Control Alt Achieve. He's so good at building all the different levels of like, if you've never seen this thing before, here's how you can use it. If you're sort of familiar with it, here's your entry point. And if you're an expert, this is a way that you can push. He's treating adult learners no different than what we would want to do with the students in our classroom.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Well, let's for today's episode, we're going to talk about some things that are going to be useful for teachers. And, you know, we're kind of getting to the point now, you know, ChatGPT being released in December of 22. And so the first couple of years you had a lot of users, but not so many people in schools using it because it wasn't available based on, network limitations and things like that. Most people at this point have at least tried one of the large language models, whether it's ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude. There's a lot of options out there. But what we're going to do today is we want to just focus on what are some of the newer innovations, some of the things that people may not have had a chance to try out yet, that can really give us some traction and really get teachers to the point where maybe they're a little bit more engaging for students or in their own workflow a little bit more effective. So, and not only effective, but efficient as well. So let's dive into that a little bit. What are some of the things right now that are available that you're excited about?
Yeah, it's a good question, Chad. So the way that I am looking at AI usage at the moment is kind of like feast or famine. So people are either like all in and they're getting great things out of it, or they've grown frustrated and are like, this thing isn't for me. I only have a few years left in teaching and I'm not going to bother with this. I'm going to make it to the finish line. But the fact of the matter is that there's really like a secret sauce behind our AI usage at the moment. And that's proper prompting. That's the thing that we stink at, myself included, is helping the AI tool or articulating what we want from the AI tool. To do that in a way that like we're actually having it work for us, not creating more work. Mm-hmm. My AI usage is about efficiency and like finding extra time to do other important things. So as a classroom teacher, I would want to use AI in order to give myself time to be with my kids in real life, having real life conversation. That I think is the most important piece of this. As we push some things toward digital, it's bringing our kids back into the real world. So as we think about our proper prompting, Google put out a really awesome document. This is a Google slide deck that was part of their summer release, but they put out a new acronym and I really like it. So typically, I've been saying there's, three parts to a proper prompt, but Google has put out this acronym, which is very literally PARTS, P-A-R-T-S. So each prompt should have five different elements. The P stands for persona, or like the brain that we want our AI tool to inhabit. A is for act, meaning like what should this AI tool actually do for us? What is it creating? The recipient is R. That is basically who is going to be the beneficiary of this thing that I am creating. And that can obviously help us to differentiate that content, whoever that may be for. We see T as the theme. So basically, you know, think of this as kind of like, where is this going to be as a part of your lesson? Is this a part of a larger unit? Is this something that, you know, is going to go with the kids back home? Is this, you know, setting up a group? You know, what's the theme? What are we trying to do here? And then lastly is the structure, which is a part that I think a lot of people leave out, because that can then help, again, us be more efficient. So allowing it to create a table if we need a table, give us a bulleted list if that's, you know, the thing that's going to be more efficient. If we're looking for a specific type of lesson, like a 5E model, right, we can get that back as well. So persona, act, recipient, theme, and structure. Those are five really integral ways to think about our prompting. Have you guys seen anything when it comes to prompting in your classrooms or with the people that you support?
I was going to say the one challenge, and I'm glad you brought this up in regards to AI prompting. The biggest challenge I see is people leave it too open-ended and then end up down a rabbit hole. And like you said, they become frustrated because they end up with either a resource or no resource, right? And so they end up with no product and they feel like they just wasted time. Or they really don't even know where to start. So they go on there, they'll ask a generic question and they're like, oh, this is cool. But they don't understand that because it is this curating machine, you literally can, you just have to put it in a box. You just have to box it yourself, but you have to be very intentional about what that box looks like. But I'd say the biggest challenge is people are just either too open-ended or really just have no clue where to start.
When I'm working with teachers in that space and trying to help them find ways to either use it for lesson planning or efficiency, in a lot of cases, they feel kind of stuck, like they don't know where to start. And I kind of look at it from a standpoint of, well, could you ask an expert questions? And as long as you could ask an expert questions or ask an expert to help you with something, that's a good place to start. And then I also sometimes find kind of a teachable moment there as far as you think about teachers. How often do we hear them say, well, the kids just don't write with enough detail or clarity in what we want them to describe. And so just like as a teacher, you might get frustrated in a student leaving a very vague, short, open-ended response. Try to give them that same feeling. Okay, that's what you don't want to do when you're prompting. You want to be as specific as possible. And the more you can drill down on exactly what you want, the better your chances of getting something that's going to be useful for what you're trying to produce or accomplish.
Yeah, really what we're doing here is having a conversation, right? And so I could ask it, I could prompt it in any way that I want to, but that's just going to elongate the conversation, right? That's not being most efficient. So if I can give it everything that I need up front, sure, I'm going to probably respond back and try and have it articulate something in a different way. But if I can get all of those things out at the beginning, I'm going to get to my endpoint much faster than just say, create a lesson plan on dogs. And now all of a sudden I have to keep prompting and keep prompting and keep asking questions when I could have followed something like this parts framework that would have gotten me to my endpoint much faster.
Mm-hmm. You know, another prompting technique that I've come across, and it really depends on what exactly that you're trying to produce or what you're trying to accomplish. But, you know, that scaffolded prompting is another method that I've seen. So, for example, if you're working on, let's say, a really complex spreadsheet, instead of trying to put everything out there that you want at the beginning, where you're more than likely going to have to go back and make a lot of changes and a lot of like reprompt to get to the exact product you're looking for. In some cases, when it involves writing code and writing maybe formulas for a spreadsheet, sometimes scaffolding it can be a nice way to look at it as well. But as you mentioned, when you have a pretty straightforward task like designing a lesson plan, you can avoid all that just by putting those five parts in there right from the beginning and not leaving any room to chance there.
Yeah, and I also want to point out, like in this document here, like they go into 100 other ways that you can use Gemini and Notebook LM, but I've really appreciated a lot of the prompt libraries that have been put out by all of the good nerds of the world, where basically I can go in, there's one for from AI for Education, where I can basically click on anything that I want to, any task that I want to, and then it actually coaches me through the process. It gives me a prompt with like fill in the blank spaces. It then gives me a version where all of those blanks are filled in. So if I wanted to, I could copy that and just put it into my tool of choice, just as almost like an exemplar to be able to see like, well, if I wrote a prompt like this, this is what I would get back. Mm-hmm. So when I go to do this for real, now maybe I want to, you know, change it this way, or I want to include something different. And that's one of the things that I love about that resource in particular is at the bottom, it gives you those coachable moments. It says like, well, be on the lookout for this, maybe consider asking that. And so really, I think we're at the point now where like, yes, all of the prompting matters. Absolutely. We can look at these documents like the 100 plus ways to use Gemini and Notebook LM in education. We can look at the AI for Education prompt library, but it's really about the individual building the opportunities for themselves to use it, or to put it in other words, building their own prompt library. And that's not just like a singular act. That is something that they can do with colleagues, with friends, with people who teach the same thing, with people who are on their grade level team, to just say, these are prompts that are rocking. They're going to get the ball rolling for you. This is a great place to start. And so building that collaboration in, because again, this is about efficiency. This is about working together in collaboration, where if we can all work together to find out what really works best, then that's going to give us more time to do the things that actually matter, which is talk to our kids.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So definitely some good stuff there with prompting. And we talked a little bit before getting on the show, just as far as with Gemini now being integrated in a lot of these tools that teachers are using in school. And most districts in our area are part of this Google ecosystem. So what are some of the things that you're finding that are exciting for teachers as far as ways that maybe Gemini's being embedded into things?
Yeah, so we're at the point now where this fall I've been talking a lot about making something out of nothing. There are so many wonderful little mini tools or mini ways that you can use Gemini all over the Google ecosystem. And I think where I'd like to start is in the Gemini integration within Google Classroom. Even if you are not a Google Classroom user, like let's say your district uses a different LMS, learning management system, you could still, as long as you have your Google email, you could still jump into Google Classroom and utilize this Gemini integration. So when you do, and you go to classroom.google.com, or you hit the waffle or the box of boxes, I don't know, what do you guys call it? Do you have a particular word?
Waffle is usually our preferred.
Yeah. Okay, good. I like a waffle too. I tend to have breakfast on my mind all the time. I'm glad we're on the same page. We are still friends. When you click the waffle and you go to Google Classroom, you'll notice on the left side of the screen, it says Gemini. And when you click on that button, you see a bunch of little like miniature tools for educators that utilize the Gemini platform. Like they've baked Gemini directly into Google Classroom. And they've done this in a bunch of really fun and unique ways. So like I said, right there inside of Classroom, ready for you to like one click a button to send the thing over to your classes or to your students. There are opportunities where I don't have to worry about a perfect prompt necessarily. If I can choose from a dropdown or if I can fill in a blank, then I'm going to have a pretty good experience with utilizing AI. And so there are all kinds of tools in there like, create a rubric, build a choice board, write a story, tackle common misconceptions, develop a unit plan, all of these possibilities that I can do directly inside of Google Classroom.
If I could jump in just real quick. Yeah. So, in my role with tech integration here at McKinley High School, one of the things I try to sell teachers on is efficiency, because the one thing that we all get the same amount of and never seem to have enough of is time. And the first two things you mentioned in that list, generating rubrics and generating choice boards, really used to be two of the most time consuming tasks that you would have. And so, putting those right at the top of the list, I mean, that's something that can really benefit any teacher, is being able to generate a rubric by explaining what you want and then letting that be built with the different descriptions for you. So I think that's a great place for teachers if they haven't used a lot of AI to dive right in just on generating a rubric.
Yeah. And, it's funny you say that, Chad, and I think back when this came out and people felt like it was dirty, right? It was one of those things like you're cheating. But what we've tried to say is, so use the AI tool, develop the template, and then refine it, right? Like what's curated doesn't have to be the thing that you take and use right away.
Right. Right. And that's no different than if we go back to the old days of paper and file cabinets and file folders. You know, there was the teacher who used the same lesson and the same worksheet for 15 straight school years versus someone who would take that lesson and then each year add something new to it and have a new twist and maybe something that made it more engaging or more relevant. And tech is no different. I mean, we've had technology integrated in our classrooms long enough now that there is, you know, I can remember when I first started integrating, you know, tech in my middle school science classroom, and any tech lesson I did was engaging because it was different than what they were doing everywhere else. Well, that is right. Just not the case anymore. And so you really do have to keep things fresh and engaging because there are stale tech lessons just like anything else.
Oh, absolutely.
What's fun about all of these integrations too, is that like we are inside of the Google bubble, right? Mm-hmm. So Gemini is now part of the core services for Google, which basically means that the data that you put into Gemini is safe and protected, just the same as what we would expect for our Google Drives, for our Gmails. We have that same level of data privacy. So we can utilize these tools. We can have it create things for us and then actually like put them into meaningful practice with our kids. One of the important pieces about all of this, like let's just take the choice board example. One of the most important parts is like it's going to create that resource for us, but it's just a Google Doc like every other Google Doc that we've created. So now I can come in and curate and change it up and make things personal if I wanted to. But that like layer of like getting the ball rolling and making the product for you just takes so much time off of your hands. And if for nothing else, is even more reason to try and use a tool kind of like this.
Yeah. And with so many of our districts being Google schools, you know, I'm starting to run into, just like we always do, you know, the debates like Mac versus PC, iPhone versus Android. You know, we've got a few users in the building who are really big on ChatGPT. Some of them have Perplexity subscription. And the thing that I keep trying to encourage people is, just as you mentioned with the core services and the data privacy, you know, that's a good reason that you're already using, you're most likely, if you're in a Google school, using Classroom, using Drive, you have some of your stuff stored in Docs and Slides, to have a tool that integrates seamlessly with all of those things that you're already using. It just makes a lot of sense to stay within that. And that doesn't mean that you might not, outside of school, if you have a subscription to one of the others and you want to use it to actually create the slides as opposed to give you the content for them, you know, I can see that makes a lot of sense. But the seamlessness of that, to not have to jump back and forth between personal accounts and school accounts, is a really nice feature for teachers to have.
Yeah, Chad, that's such an important point, because like competition in this space is really good for us as the consumers. Mm-hmm. So we see other products that are out there, like your school AIs of the world, like your Magic School, like Teacher Server, which I love, but basically they have all of the, you know, little mini, chat experiences or little widgets to do various things within their, you know, within their product. But that competitive aspect of Google has always been where they'll say like, okay, this is a product that is driving eyeballs away from our bubble. Like, what could we do, or what could we create to keep people inside of this, or at least, streamline that process for them as they're creating things. And so really, if you go to Classroom and you check out this integration of Gemini, you're going to find that it's a very similar experience to your Magic Schools, your school AIs, mm-hmm. Except it's free and it's integrated, and it's actually going to create some of those resources for you rather than putting many of those features behind a paywall, which I think is a reason enough to at least give this a test drive.
Yeah, in schools for sure. Anything that we can use that's a free service, that's always a good thing.
So the great Charles Barkley once said, if it's free, it's for me. And so that's how I've been living my life. If it's free, I'll take three. That was Charles. God love him.
Yeah. And so while you were talking about it, I actually popped it up on the other screen. And, you know, going through what Gemini has embedded in Classroom, I mean, this is pretty rich. You know, I think even the teachers that curate the resources outside have to find ways to embed it inside Classroom, either by then putting it into Docs and then making a copy for each student, or creating the PDF. And there's always another lag, right? And if we're talking about efficiency and saving time, use the tool that's embedded that can do the same thing that your other one's doing.
Yeah. So Alan, since you're in there, I want to call your attention to the little icons too. So as you're following along at home, there are colorful icons that show different things, but then several of them have the Google Gemini icon. That's like the star looking thing. Mm-hmm. And those are so fun to check out as well. Basically, anyone that you see with that little Gemini star logo, that's going to pop you out to Gemini, where it's going to have like an absolutely rocking prompt waiting for you, that now it's that conversational piece between you and the AI tool, where again, all I'm doing is answering questions, or I'm providing the information, because the tool itself has already built in that prompt that really streamlines the process for me. So I think it's just a really fun integration. And like I said, as we're looking at new or newish ways that we can go about utilizing AI in our classrooms, I think this is an absolute home run.
Oh yeah. And so just obviously following along, right? You click on it. I clicked on Jigsaw, and you've got the prompt that starts questioning. So then it takes away that vagueness that I may start with, and it automatically starts getting to the point of what I want to design.
Gets the ball rolling down the hill.
Yep.
Yeah, to get back to our earlier conversation about like proper prompting, it's so fun to then click on like the expand text button in that prompt to scroll down and see like, whoa, like this is a really robust prompt. Like I can do so much more with my prompting than just say, build a lesson plan about dogs, right? There are so many elements that are baked in here. So this is a wonderful learning opportunity then for like, this is what my prompting could get to, or this is the, that exemplar of this is what I could achieve with my prompting if I start to curate my resources this way.
I think, as you mentioned, the term you just mentioned there, curating resources, is something that really stands out to me too, because there's a lot of talk about how skills are changing and the things that we're going to need moving forward are different. But even when we start to, in our profession, when we start to integrate AI tools, the most time consuming part is, in a lot of cases, getting that prompting dialed into exactly what you want. And so the same skills that we used to have with pencil and paper, being able to organize, keep things where you can find them. You know, if you could write beautiful prompts, and if you can't go back and locate that or quickly access that later, you know, then that's going to be you're not maximizing the efficiency that you could have if you have everything well organized and you have your own, as you mentioned, having not just like a generic prompt library, but your own personal library that maybe you share with your content area teachers, with your grade level teachers. So those organizational skills, I think, are still the human element of that is still important, even as we move deeper into the digital space and more, even more into artificial intelligence.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about, these little buttons or like little shortcuts, almost little widgets within Google Classroom, but it really highlights a new area within Gemini as a whole as well, where they are making gems more available for all of us. So if you go to gemini.google.com or go to your Waffle and go to Gemini, you're going to notice over on the left side of your screen that underneath where it says, you know, new chat or where you're going to start out your new conversation, that you're going to see the word gems there as well. And my guess is that for most of you, when you do so, you're going to see the word storybook appear right underneath that. And this is a really fun new opportunity to utilize Gemini in a brand new way. So essentially what we can do, and I don't want you to see storybook and think like, oh, this is just for elementary. Like this can be for anybody. We all love to be read to, right? But we can create all kinds of really interesting picture books on any number of topics. So could be something like if you wanted to see, a claymation story, you can make that happen. If you want something that's more like a comic book style, you can do that, like graphic novel. If you want like a coloring book, you can even ask it to do a coloring book. And each time you create one of these stories, it's a new opportunity for you to basically say, this is what I want my story to be about, and provide as many details as you want. You can even upload your own photos if you want to, and it will integrate the characters or the things that it sees in that photo into your story. So I did a really fun example here where my good friend Tom Nunziato, he loves Sasquatch and soccer. And so I wrote a story that I made for him that was basically an animated journey. It was his discovery of Bigfoot and then he and Bigfoot going on adventures together. And so what's fun is that you can like save these stories, right? They're saved just along every other conversation that you've ever had within Gemini. But you can actually like, you know, come back to them and refer to them and use them with your kids. You could print them out if you wanted to. If you wanted to have something that was like an offline activity, you can have it create the story. Instead of like sending it to your printer, you could save it as a PDF even and share it out that way. But if you wanted to print it out, then you have this physical copy that your kids, that your parents, you know, maybe this is something that you want to let them know about, you know, the processes of your classroom or what it's like to be a student in your school building, whatever that may be. But you can share those things out then as you are creating these really wonderful stories. The other feature that I think is really fun in here is that you get the ability to have the tool actually read to you. So when you you know, finish your story and you have it created, then you can hit the listen button that's in that top corner. And it isn't the like robotic voice that we have come to know. It's an actual like pleasing like librarian voice that is, you know, reading these stories over to you. And that can toggle between what they call a higher pitch voice or a lower pitch voice. You know, it just creates such a wonderful opportunity for the teacher to duplicate themselves within their classroom. So some students can be listening to the story and following along while you can then intervene with other students and, you know, do other things with them to bring them up to, you know, to the same level as other students too. So just a really awesome example of the gems that are being created for us. Again, these are things that you can do or you can create on your own, but we are starting to see more and more of these be developed by and shared with us through Google. So like at the moment, they have Storybook, they have the writing editor, there's a learning coach. If you wanted to like play chess with it, there's a chess champ that's on there as well as like a coding partner. There's so many awesome opportunities within the Gem Manager to create these little shortcuts or little widgets all on your own.
I really like the idea of using AI to foster creativity, because for a lot of the concerns that people have about us just relying on AI to do a lot of the things that we used to do. And, you know, what are we going to, you know, are we going to start to see like a little bit of decreased brain function just because we're letting AI do everything that we used to do? But I don't really, if I look ahead, I'm excited about the future of not really seeing that type of scenario, but being able to generate more creative ideas, being able to do things that we couldn't do before. I mean, based on my artistic ability, you know, creating a story might not be something that I'd be really solid at, but I would have the ideas to get started. And then using that together with AI, you're getting even more engaged than you would have as opposed to less. So,
you know, I think every level that we've seen tech over the last however many decades, right, there's always been that fear it's going to replace something. I think it does, but it stretches the other part, right? It'd be very easy to just use ChatGPT, Gemini, Storybook, create my project that does this, this, and this, right? Turn it in. Whatever. But the majority, right? I'm sitting here, I'm toying with it as we're going through this. And I'm like, it'd be very easy to say, kid, expand on it. Make it do something that you can't. Like you just said, Chad, you can't, right? My artistic ability is probably worse than yours, right? But I can prompt it to keep making something that I can visualize in my head, but I can't do on paper. And as I do that, I'm investing in it and I'm still, it's my ideas. It's just helping me design it in a way that I may physically not be able to do.
You're just using a different tool.
That's it.
Well, speaking of that,
I'm sorry. We're talking a lot about like the animated portion of it or like the picture portion of it. But like, think about this also like in the classroom setting where I can give it the content, right? I can say, this is what I know about, you know, plate tectonics. Turn this into a story. And I provide all of the information that goes into it. You even get the ability to edit these stories after the fact. So if there's some kind of information or even like one of the photos, if it appears wonky, because we know that AI image generation can do that sometimes, we are just continuing the conversation just like every other AI prompting that we've done previously to say, I don't like what's on page 6. It says this, change that to be this, and it'll make those updates for you as well. So tons of possibilities as fun as it is to look at all of the images,
yeah, right.
But, we get the ability to put important content in there as well. And that I think is the secret sauce there.
Yeah. And those are like editorial skills, right? Those are types of skills that you're not going to create a lesson for, but you're going to design and naturally embed within it. So you're saying, you can be very intentional. I need you to refine on page 6 where it says this, it needs to say this. And it gets kids to almost go back and review their work with it, especially because it does say, right, experiment. So there's definitely going to be some errors along the way.
I think about student work, and one of the things that as a teacher, it's always challenging to get kids to think like an engineer in terms of reiterating and improving their first draft or their first process that they developed. And really, reiteration is at the core of what we do with AI. So to me, that's an exciting learning opportunity, because AI is not a one and done task. It's really a process of building and starting with your first output and getting to the point where you really like what you've produced, as opposed to just whatever the first thing that's returned. So I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about, the image generation portion of it, of Storybook. But Google has another tool that I think is really awesome, especially as we're considering like making something out of nothing. And that is a Google experiment that's called Whisk. So I don't know about you guys. I like to cook and I like to bake. And when I have like my literal whisk, right, I'm combining ingredients to make something like brand new out of all of them. And Whisk functions the exact same way. So Whisk asks you to basically provide the subject, the scene, as well as the style of anything that you can think of. And you can do this in two different ways. You can either upload your own photos for each of those three, or you can just provide a few words if you would like, a few sentences, even if you feel compelled to fit any one of those. They even have a really fun button that it looks like a die. And when you click it, it like rolls the dice for you and it just puts in a random image. But essentially, it takes those three elements, right? Our subject, our scene, and our style, and it makes a new image for us that is completely unique, that we can then, download and put into any other platform, our Google Docs, share within Classroom, put it up on the board and have kids discuss, what they're seeing or the elements that they're seeing. But like, not only is that able to create these images for us, but like, I think of this as kind of like the next step of like AI and where it's like going to go is we tend to joke now about like AI image creation. There's always the dead giveaways because somebody's going to have 6 fingers or like the words are all going to be nonsense. But these are like really great images that are generated here on this tool that you can continue to curate or continue to customize, that you can take things that kids are learning in the classroom and you can bring them to life. So think about like all the stories, that your kids are reading, all of the like actual concepts that maybe you would be like searching for that perfect image on, your Google image searches of the world. Like you just can't find it. Well, now there are tools out there such as Whisk. Even baked into Gemini, they have their Nano Banana, which sounds like nonsense, like I'm making that up, but that's actually what that
is. Oh, that's their image generator, their new version.
And so now we have these opportunities to create in a safe space, because I think that piece is important, create these images in a safe space that then we can utilize with our kids.
I think one of the things that Google really does a nice job with with their experiments is they just have a way of designing those where they just are kind of lighthearted and fun. And when we're talking about engaging kids, that's always a good place to start. And so we'll definitely, for all these tools we're talking about, we'll have links in the show notes for anybody who's trying to find their way over to these things. But I think about, for example, as you mentioned, you have an English teacher who's reading through a novel and they want to create just some fun or maybe even silly photos that involve the characters of the book and add in some different things, or even just like a class session where people are given ideas like the three different areas and what do we want for each one and see what kind of image we come up with or what kind of output we get. Anything we can do to hook kids and bring them into the content we're trying to teach and keep them focused is always going to be a positive thing. And I think this is definitely a step in the right direction in that regard.
Yeah. So think of it too, in the example that you just gave, Chad, like think about as I'm reading my novel, as I'm reading my story, I'm visualizing those things in my head. And so having students even say, like, for this particular scene, this is what it looks like in my head, and, you know, physically writing it out or typing it as a response inside of Google Classroom or on a doc or something. And then the teacher being able to say, okay, let's bring that to life. You included these details. Let's put it into, you know, our subject, our scene and our style, and see if we can bring your thoughts in your head to real life. Like, what a powerful tool to hook kids and to get them interested in the things that you're doing within your classroom.
Visualizing your writing. I mean, brainstorming it, maybe like you said, getting it down on a doc in different categories and then being able to visualize and bring it's almost like the writing process brought to life in the end of what you see.
Yeah. I think there's ways that they can take it to that next level. Right. And if we can really break down that fear of it replacing and use it more as extending, right? This instruction could become that much more rich.
Yeah. So one thing that I think all three of us probably would say what we'd have in common, Alan, you spent some time as a disciplinary literacy coach, curriculum specialist. Matt, you mentioned the instructional coaching and some of the things you've done. I'm currently working in that space along with tech integration. And one thing we know about teachers is that they sometimes develop certain processes that they get really attached to and have a hard time deviating from that or being able to convince them that there might be a more efficient way or even, for lack of a better word, a better way of doing some of the things that they do. So, Matt, maybe we can kind of finish up with this. If you come across a teacher who's, not to say it, not a good or even great teacher, but somebody who's just kind of resistant with some of these newer tools and they have their processes, they have all their resources in order, and they're not really interested. How would you encourage or convince them that they can take good or great teaching and expand it and go even further using AI resources and tools?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have been wonderful for having me, and I really, really appreciate that. The reason why I wanted to share those three tools is because they are three small wins that any educator can do, right? We have our Gemini integration into Classroom. We have our Google Whisk for our image creation. And then we also have our gems, right, inside of Gemini. We have so many wonderful things that like take very little effort for the teacher just to kind of see like the benefit, right? These are little small wins that, you know, I can dip a toe into the AI water and I can, you know, make some magic happen for my kids or even, you know, just for something silly, like to send to a colleague. Mm-hmm. But the more that we kind of get it, you know, further from like the great boom of when ChatGPT kind of burst onto the scene and set the world on fire, the more I'm looking for opportunities to like do more with AI. So if that is our end goal, then by all means, like please learn how to use these tools the best by utilizing some of those little gems inside of Classroom, by going to a tool like Teacher Server, where there are like over 1,100 different mini tools that a teacher can use. That if I can click, if I can choose from a dropdown, if I can fill in a blank, then I'm going to have a really great experience with AI. And I think the more we can do that, the more we can treat AI kind of like a conversational partner, like, you know, pretend that you have like the expert in your content in the classroom right next to you. And they're always available and they're never annoyed with how many questions you have. And they always have great content to share. The more we can think about our AI tools as that kind of a thing, rather than what like Hollywood has taught us, where like the robots are coming and our robot overlords are coming for the takeover. I think the more we're going to see like the benefit of integrating some of these things to kind of push away those thoughts of like, AI is coming for my job, I'm not using these, you know, those kinds of hurdles, and more seeing it as a collaborative partner, as, you know, that expert in my field and, you know, the thing that's helping me to enhance the things that are already awesome in my classroom.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that you hear Eric Kurtz say a lot of times in his PD sessions are, you know, the smartest person in the room is the room. And so when you think about having that AI, you know, chatbot or large language model at your disposal, you don't even have the knowledge of the room. You have the knowledge of the world almost, because that's been trained on the entire internet and so many more sources even beyond that. So just as you said, you've got an expert to tap into, not just for the expert in the room, but the expert using all the knowledge that we have available that's out there.
It's pretty powerful thing.
Yeah, which I think is really important, because we're starting to see, instead of just doing a regular Google search where I type a couple words in, I get a million responses, and then we all just click on the top one because I know that's what we do. Right. We're seeing the AI being baked directly into that. I know like Bing has that integration as well. Nobody uses Bing, but they have it. We're starting to see this be just like another tool in our tool belt, just the same as how we were all trained on and now are, you know, using Google, you know, pretty much universally for our searches. This piece, I think, is going to come alongside that, where, you know, it is here and it's available to us. And now it's a tool to help get us to our answers much faster.
Yeah, I would say using search has, I mean, within the past probably 6 to 9 months, I would say it's probably 80-20 now, where I now more instinctively go to either ChatGPT, Gemini, Perplexity, one of my LLMs, as opposed to maybe 20% of the time, if I'm looking for a specific website, go to just do a search. But it's really shifting in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that, as far as the, you know, with the things that we've talked about today, I often tell our teachers here at McKinley, anytime you come across a cool new thing, let me know, because I'd love to be able to replicate that and share that with others. There's so many new things in the education space being, you know, released all the time that really no one person can know of or master all of them. And so, Matt, we really appreciate you coming on today. Three new things that I really, with WISC and also with the storybook, those are two things I haven't had a chance to dip my toes in the water yet. So I'm excited about those, to not only get involved and try them out, but pass those on to some of our teachers here in the building as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
No problem, Chad. Alan, you guys are great. What I'll say is, if you're a part of the nerd community, and if you've made it this long into the podcast, congratulations, you're a part of the nerd community. It is a give and take. So I am learning just like all of you. You know, if you've learned something new, evangelize, share it, talk about how it can be utilized for other people, because, you know, the nerd community giveth as well. So, you know, somebody out there is going to teach you something that that you'll get to then utilize and implement too. So always be sharing.
All right. Well, this has been a good time. I've enjoyed it, Matt. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you. No problem.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and write us a review. You can find all episodes of Teaching in Tech with Alan and Chad on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.